Perinatal Stories Australia.
Welcome to Perinatal Stories Australia. My name is Rebecca, and every episode we provide a listening ear to the lived experiences of mental illness during pregnancy and postpartum. I hope this podcast reduces stigma, informs listeners about support services available, and inspires those on their own healing journey. More importantly, I hope you can hear these stories and know you're not alone. Thank you for being here to hold space for the stories we often keep to ourselves. Hi everyone, welcome back. I'm joined today by Amelia, who's here to share her story with, unfortunately, a major postpartum hemorrhage and the subsequent mania, insomnia, hallucination, delusions, and I believe psychosis that came out of that.
Yeah.
And Amelia's also here to take us on her journey from how she dealt with all that to now being pregnant with bub number two. So I'm so honoured you're here to share your story. So thank you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited and I feel so grateful for this platform and to be able to share with everyone.
Do you know where you actually want to start your story? Was there anything that came up in the previous pregnancy that might have suggested anxiety or anything was coming, or it was just after the hemorrhage?
Yeah, so I guess I was pregnant in 2020, so we're talking COVID year. And I guess my underlying kind of mild to moderate anxiety my whole life just really got exacerbated that year. Mm-hmm. And with all the telehealth and not knowing what was going to happen or what was coming or what COVID meant for pregnant women, I definitely felt overwhelmed and scared, and I wasn't expecting the huge kind of mental illness that did eventuate. But it was definitely a year of pretty full-on feelings and emotions and struggles.
Yeah, and I think a lot of women unfortunately felt that increase in anxiety and isolation as a result of COVID. Yeah, and totally. The lockdowns and things, and being so worried about what does this mean for me, the baby, are we going to be okay, what does it mean for birth? I don't think we reflect on that enough, so thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And so approaching birth, how was that? And obviously the birth itself is where this big, I'm going to say, event, this hemorrhage happened.
Yeah, well, we had a pretty amazing labor and birth actually, and I was with the group midwifery practice here at my local hospital, which was just incredible. And we labored at home for about 6 hours, and then I went in, and it was about midday when I arrived at hospital, and then by 3:30 Nora was born. And it was a very kind of physiological, no pain relief, beautiful kind of birth. And we were just kind of lapping up her and this amazing experience we'd just had. And maybe like 6 hours post having her, I started to bleed. So that was very traumatic and resulted in emergency surgery. So I got whisked away and left my husband Sandy and baby Nora, and not knowing what was going to happen or what, they were even going to do. It was just let's stop the bleeding quickly. So this is about 1 a.m. in the morning now. Mm. With the kind of waking up from that surgery, I immediately felt something was off, and I was very straight away very manic, and my thoughts were just kind of all over the place. The trauma of that kind of event, despite having such a beautiful labor and birth, set it off. So we were meant to, with the group midwifery practice, you're kind of encouraged to go home pretty much straight away. So my plan was never to be in the hospital, but then after the surgery I stayed for 5 days on the postnatal ward, and my whole world, I guess, had just completely shifted, and I wasn't I guess, present in my mind, and I was having hallucinations and delusions and hearing things and seeing things and feeling things. And yeah, it was all really, really scary, as I've heard a lot of the women that have shared their stories with you have kind of had similar experiences. So that all really resonated with me. And yeah, I guess, like, just to preface this, my dad's actually a retired psychiatric nurse. So my thoughts around mental illness had been very influenced by his experiences, I guess. And so I knew something wasn't right, but I was too afraid to kind of share exactly what was going on. I guess the fear of what could happen, as in my baby's going to get taken, or I'm going to get locked away, or and the stigma around mental illness. So yeah, it took about 8 weeks actually to get properly diagnosed and properly medicated.
And so you went home and no one in the hospital had picked up on...
They were talking about PTSD. And because my mind was just so manic, I wasn't sleeping. So for the 5 days that we were in the hospital, I was having maybe 2 hours of sleep a day, which just, come to realize that can really bring on some very severe mental illness. So
It's interesting you said that, like, they were talking about PTSD because, I mean, it's possible that it's there, but I've always wondered how similar hypervigilance and mania present. You know, it's like you're on edge, you're looking for danger everywhere. So I'm so sorry you went through that.
Thank you.
And if I can ask, you said that you were experiencing hallucinations and delusions, but you recognized it.
Yeah.
You were able to recognize, okay, this isn't a real, you know, thing talking to me or thing that I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Can I ask what some of those were like, if you're comfortable sharing?
Yeah, sure. So initially it was to do with the surgery. So I was telling the doctors and nurses, you know, I can feel snakes all over me. And they were saying, you know, that could have been the wires and things that were on you during the surgery. And then I said, I can feel people like choking me. And they said, oh, when you get intubated, this is what happens. And so they explained it, and it like made sense, but also I was, just like,
it felt real. Hey.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, those were the kind of initial things. And I could, I had enough insight at that time to be like, this isn't real, even though it feels real. And then I guess gradually the thoughts changed, and I couldn't kind of differentiate between what was real and what wasn't.
So was Nora staying with you on the postnatal ward while you were in the hospital? What was it like, you know, trying to be a mum amongst, you know, the lack, you know, we talk about mums don't sleep, but this is on another level, right? There's a lack of sleep. There's an insomnia here. And obviously there's all these other symptoms as well. What's that like, trying to mum for the first time?
I don't know. It was like a lot of my memory is obviously kind of gone or very fuzzy. But I do remember, like, even when she was asleep, I had to do stuff. I was journaling frantically. I was doing all this skincare regime, which I don't normally do. I was checking for things, and I just wasn't able to relax at all. And for some miraculous reason, I was able to breastfeed, and they were really shocked, I guess, because of the blood loss. Lots of women, unfortunately, don't end up being able to breastfeed after a PPH, but luckily enough. So that really helped my bonding and experience with Nora. And every time I held her, I felt calm, and it really grounded me and brought me back. It was just the moments of in between, I guess. And I thought, you know, I was superwoman and I was going to change the world, and I had all these plans of starting like charities, and it was completely wild.
Yeah, it's like those notions of grandeur. And so you've gone home with Nora, and it wasn't until 8 weeks later or 8 weeks postpartum, that you were actually able to get help. Now, if I can ask, what on earth were those 8 weeks like, especially at home?
Yeah. So because of like the symptoms that I was showing, the hospital did put in place, well, the group midwives actually would come to my house still for home visits, which was probably one of the biggest things that I guess helped and supported us in the end, because it was on one of these visits that the midwife kind of questioned a bit of some of my behavior, and I didn't know, but she called Sandy once she'd left and said, you know, is Amelia okay? I noticed these things. Should we look into it a bit? So that was probably the thing that got the ball rolling in terms of getting in some more mental health support.
Yeah.
And then it was only 2 days after coming home, and my mother-in-law was here kind of napping. Nora was asleep. Sandy was having a nap. I should have been napping. And all of a sudden, I just had this overwhelming feeling that I'd overdosed on, they'd given me some sleeping tablets to try and help bring on some more rest.
Mm.
And I needed to call MotherSafe straight away. It was like this urgent, dire situation in my head. But being a weekend, that line was closed. Mm. So then I thought, oh, I'm going to call Health Direct or whatever the other number you can get, like advice. And obviously her job is to ensure that my health and the baby's health was all good. And she advised me to kind of rouse Nora using cold water from her beautiful sleep.
So can I just confirm, is she thinking that because you've hypothetically overdosed, that therefore the baby has gotten it through breast milk? Yeah. Is that what they think? Okay, got it.
Yeah, so this moment of like terror crosses Sandy's mind and my mother-in-law's mind, and they're going like, what is going on? And yeah, so from that kind of experience, we ended up going back to the hospital for an assessment, and then I got readmitted onto the postnatal ward again just for 2 nights.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, Nora was a rooming baby, so she wasn't actually admitted, but she was able to stay with me. And that's when I saw a psychiatrist.
Mm.
But still, again, no one could determine exactly what was going on. And I guess I wasn't being forthcoming either, or I just didn't realize what was real, what wasn't, what was going on for me. So that's the next 2 days. And then we get discharged again, but this time they've put us or referred us to a community psychology service. And the, as part of that team, we had a perinatal mental health nurse, and she was amazing. And she came to our house, and she was also a midwife, and she had years and years of experience, so it was like having an aunt or a grandma.
Yeah.
But yeah, she really helped, and I would just keep in touch with her, call her whenever I had a concern or anything. So a few weeks kind of passed and we were all doing okay. I was still obviously not well, but well enough that no one was concerned.
Mm.
We saw my GP, and the mental health community team would come to the house, and yeah, saw the child and family health nurse, and it got to about around Australia Day, and I think I'd been driving and I was starting to have like suicidal ideation by now, and getting scared that Nora wasn't a baby. Like I would look at her and think, oh, this is a robot and they're recording me, and there's people watching the house. And so it had turned very, very dark and scary.
So had that kind of just came out of nowhere, or was it a building up in those weeks? It was definitely
building up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And luckily I called, I think, Panda first and spoke to someone there. And then my perinatal mental health nurse. And yeah, I just have this vision of like an ambulance kind of pulling up behind the car, but I don't know if someone had kind of organized that or if that was just happening because we live in a city. It was just in my head, like, oh, they're taking me away. And it was up to me to go and present to the hospital for an assessment, or I guess I would have been scheduled in hindsight. And yeah, we managed to, I had to call Sandy and say, you have to come home from work and this is happening. And
so, sorry, had your perinatal mental health nurse said, Amelia, I think this might be more than anxiety, more than PTSD. I think this might be psychosis. Like, was that part of the conversation?
No. I don't know if she just didn't want to kind of scare me. It was more like, oh, we'd just recommend that you go and have a chat up at the hospital again.
Sure.
And I was feeling really safe about the hospital and the experience we'd had so far, so I felt comfortable going there.
Which is phenomenal that you could trust her, because I can't imagine it's easy that someone saying, you know, that you're telling them your symptoms and they all of a sudden turn around and say, hey, I hear what you're saying. Maybe let's go to the hospital. Like, it's incredible that you had that relationship, because I can imagine that that conversation could have gone very differently. Like, your reaction to that conversation could have gone differently had you not had that rapport with that person.
Definitely. And I guess in my head, knowing like what scheduling means and those kinds of things, it didn't feel like that. It was more a suggestion and like, yeah, I don't know. So we were lucky though that Sandy's sister and brother-in-law were visiting, so we could leave Nora with them. So at least Sandy didn't have two of us to be worried about. And yeah, we went up to like the main hospital where I'd given birth, and basically they don't have a psychiatric unit there. And I guess the phone conversation, it had been lost in the communications that which hospital they meant for me to go to. So there's another local hospital that has a psychiatric unit. So we got to the main big hospital and they had to kind of, oh, this isn't where you should be. And at that time I'd kind of gone to this place where I thought I was dying. So they'd sent me to the hospital to die, basically. And it was like terrifying for Sandy. I can't imagine what was going through his head. And I was in two minds about just getting out of the car and running. I don't know where I was going or what I was doing, but yeah, he managed to get me back into the car and get to the other hospital. And I don't know how long we were there, but the assessment, they must have decided there that it was in fact a psychotic event. And that's when I was given the antipsychotic medication for the first time. So that was olanzapine, and it was, I guess, because like I'm so lucky that Sandy is such amazing support and partner, and then we also had family around. They said, we're comfortable with you going home, because there's no MBUs where we live, and there actually wasn't any publicly funded MBUs at that time.
Not in 2021, yeah.
No, it's only since 2022. Mm. So it would have been very traumatizing if I had been admitted.
So you would have been by yourself.
Yeah, totally. And without Nora, and all the breastfeeding would have just ended suddenly. And so I'm so grateful that, yeah, we were in a position to come home and have the community support come to the house. And yeah, so that kind of began the medication journey, and that completely changed my mind, what was going on in my mind and what was happening for us. So yeah, from then on, I gradually got better. And obviously there's like ups and downs with mental health, and
of course.
It took a long time to properly, I guess, feel like me again. But yeah, the medication definitely, yeah, helped massively. So
for sure. I mean, something like psychosis especially, it's not something you can think your way out of at all. No. And in terms of medication, while we're on this topic, you mentioned you'd been given the sleeping tablets beforehand. Yeah. How were they, and were you still having to take them with the antipsychotic medication? And also, Were you able to sleep in those weeks prior to getting this assessment?
Yeah, so obviously with a newborn, you're still having very fragmented sleep. Mm. But I had started to be able to wind down a lot more easily. And I don't know how much sleep I was getting, but I was functioning. The sleeping tablets made me feel very out of it. And I guess, yeah, just not like just foggy and fuzzy. And but that was kind of going on anyway. So it was like making it worse. So I didn't really take the sleeping medication for long. And it was like when I had that moment of, oh my God, I've overdosed, it was too hard for me to take it again.
Of course, yeah.
So yeah, we didn't use any sleeping medication. With the antipsychotic olanzapine, it's a sedative anyway. So that was a nighttime medication, which obviously has side effects. And I guess for the first while I was getting used to it and they adjusted it and things, I didn't feel safe driving, and yeah, it just affected my mood and what was going on, but it completely like zenned me out and calmed me. And
if I can ask, in terms of being able to continue breastfeeding, was it safe enough that they said you can still breastfeed, or did they say you had to wean?
So it's safe for breastfeeding, which was amazing. I'm not sure what other people, doses people have been on. So the dose I was taking was safe. So yeah, that was great. And my breastfeeding journey only ended with Nora when she was 2 and 2 months. So
yeah. So recently, okay, so the medication's kicking in here, some side effects, but for the most part, you know, those symptoms are, you know, easing.
Mm.
I guess my question is, how does it feel looking back? Because as you said, you don't remember some of these experiences or behaviors or moments at such a crucial time in your life as a new mother. You know, looking back, I'm imagining grief, but don't let me put words in your mouth.
Definitely a big grieving period, just because I feel like I missed out on so much. And a lot of mums you talk to say, I don't remember the newborn stage at all. And
for different reasons.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm grateful for technology, and we've got amazing videos and photos from when Nora was a newborn. But yeah, there's been a lot of healing, and I've seen various psychologists for a long time. And I should also say I was put on an antidepressant. And I can't remember when that was started. I think it was before the olanzapine. So that really numbed me out and made me quite emotionless. And the psychiatrist has since said, you know, oh, I'm not sure why you're put on that. I guess at the time the GP thought she was doing the right thing, and they thought it was, you know, severe depression and
PTSD and stuff.
That was another thing to adjust to. And
so they weaned you off the antidepressant to then start the antipsychotic, or it was both?
Yeah, and I think I was on the antipsychotic for between like 9 and 12 months, I'm not actually sure, and then the antidepressant for 18 months to 2 years, and it was like a slow wean, which is, you know, the suggested thing. So yeah, just like adjusting to a new kind of me and how I was engaging in the world. And yeah, that also brought up a lot of things, because I guess I didn't feel like myself for such a long time. And you know, the huge hormonal shift that happens when you're a mother anyway, despite everything else, you change as a person. So yeah, it was a lot of kind of coming to terms with things and healing and grieving. And yeah, I'd say like, yeah, definitely took probably until the end of last year to feel like, oh, like everything's cool and I'm back to the old Amelia. And yeah.
And so in order to process all of that, that was through the help of, I think you said, psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk a bit more about that relationship and how that's helped?
The initial psychology service that I was referred to was a community-based one, so I didn't have to pay for that. And I was going very regularly and would just take Nora, and it was just kind of processing and talking about things and checking in. And then once that, I'm not sure how many sessions they kind of provide, that was for a good while there. And then I got referred to a private service, and I still go there regularly now, especially since becoming pregnant this year again and processing, you know, the lead up to our next baby and labor and birth and postnatal period. So that's been hugely important, and we've done a lot of different, she's offered kind of, you know, more mindfulness, CBT, and I guess just talking about things and learning to let worries kind of slide and not buying into, you know, the anxiety and what's going on, waiting to see, you know, what the reality actually is. And
which is not an easy skill. So, yeah, I'm glad that they've been able to help you work through that. And, you know, you said at the end of last year that that's when you started to feel like yourself again. And I assume that's when you had a conversation to say, I think I'm ready for bub number two.
Yeah. So we're really excited and I guess nervous. And
of course,
you know, we've put a lot of effort and energy and supports in place to kind of ensure things are different this time in a positive way. And
and some examples would be,
so initially, as soon as we found out I was pregnant, the GP straight away kind of put the referrals into place, and I got linked up with a midwifery group called Family Support. So they're for more vulnerable women and families, and it's kind of like the group midwifery practice in that I see the same midwife and she comes to my house. It's just that she won't be there for the birth, but then she'll come postnatally for six weeks as well. So that's been really great because that continuity of care is such a massive part of good practice.
Yeah, and I haven't heard of that service. That's incredible.
I don't know if it's offered everywhere, but at our local hospital, that's one of the different midwifery models of care. And then I've seen a psychiatrist privately, and then also since becoming pregnant, she works through the local hospital as well. So she's managing the antipsychotic side of things. And yeah, for this birth, we'll be having a 5-day stay, give or take, depending on how things go. I guess some people might not know, but once you've had a postpartum psychosis, there's a 50% chance of it recurring.
Yeah.
So I haven't had to go on any medication in the pregnancy, but I will be taking olanzapine pretty much as soon as the baby's born, prophylactically, for maybe, I think they've said at least 3 months, but it could be 6 or 12 months. We'll just see what happens. And that's just to ensure things kind of stay well and good. And that was a big decision to kind of come to terms with, having already taken the medication and knowing, you know, what changes it made to me and my mind and my body. And but yeah, we kind of decided that the risks outweigh the benefits, and I'm happy to start that, especially because it's safe with breastfeeding. And
and then
I've been seeing the same psychologist again, which has been really helpful. Sandy and I have done we did hypnobirthing actually with Nora's pregnancy, and kind of kept that mind frame for this labor and birth. And I've done some debriefs and kind of just more mindfulness practice and yoga and meditation.
And when you say debriefs, was that specifically for the postpartum hemorrhage experience and the surgery, or was that for the postpartum experience that you had?
For the whole postpartum experience, yeah. I engaged with, as probably lots of listeners know, about Bea from
Core and Floor.
Yeah. Yep. So she did an amazing 1.5-hour kind of debrief and birth prep session with me, and that was incredible. So I'm really grateful for that experience too.
It's been such a big I mean, what, it's been over 3 years now since you've gone through this.
Yeah.
And it's still continuing because you've got a baby coming very soon in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you wanted to share about your experience?
Yeah, so Nora's turning 3 next week.
Wow.
It's wild. And it's just weird, the timing as well with this next baby, like, because we're going through similar things at the same time of year. And I actually studied midwifery for 2 years, like straight out of high school. So, you know, over 10 years ago. But postnatal mental illness, and especially postnatal psychosis, was never mentioned. So I had no like idea that it was even a thing. I'd heard of postnatal depression and anxiety, and yeah, having kind of had episodes of depression and anxiety in my teens and 20s. And even panic attacks, like I was already aware that things could potentially turn for the worst, I guess, in the postnatal period. But the psychosis just came out of nowhere and really floored me. So I think it's really important that, not to scare people, but just for people to be aware that these things happen. And it's like any illness, you know, you would go and get help for a physical injury or illness. So I guess my main message for people is, you know, it's not you, it's an illness, and there's no shame in getting help and support and speaking about what's going on for you. I think since going through it all, it's I found some positives in that my relationships with people are stronger, and you know, when you share your vulnerabilities, other people feel safe to kind of open up. And I think just knowing that there's help out there, people generally want to help. You know, there's nothing worse than sitting on these kinds of thoughts and feelings alone. So yeah, definitely reaching out and getting that support earlier is really important.
For sure. And I mean, as you said, you know, you've got a father who's worked in psychiatric nursing. You did midwifery and you knew about postpartum depression and anxiety, but not postpartum psychosis. I always think about how are our loved ones meant to actually pick up on, the symptoms and the behaviours that we're displaying when, you know, we're not even taught or aware of them. So
yeah, exactly.
And as you had said before, you can only imagine how hard it is for our loved ones to see us like that and to experience that with us. And you know, with postpartum psychosis especially, there is so much misinformation. And I'm just wondering if there was something you wish any listener knew about postpartum psychosis from your personal experience.
It doesn't mean, you know, you're just the illness. Like if you've had a psychotic event, you're not a psychopath. Like there's a lot of support and healing and recovery, and you know, you will get better, and you're not labeled forever as this person with this illness. And yeah, definitely using the services like Panda, like Cope, they've got some amazing resources and information. And yeah, now we're lucky in New South Wales to have MBUs available for some people. I've become, I guess, acquaintances with a few women that have, you know, had similar experiences and have had time spent in MBUs. And from what I've heard, it's an amazing service, and yeah, I'd advocate for more of those facilities to be available. I think, you know, in our maybe mother's generation, grandmother's generation, people just carried on and kept it all to themselves, and these things had to be going on, you know, forever. There's no shame in seeking help and telling people what's going on for you, and getting that support and being, you know, the best mother you can be. And yeah, it's, I'm now at a point where I'm like, wow, if I hadn't had that experience, I wouldn't know all these things and be able to share and help other people. But at the time, it's a scary and full-on experience.
Definitely. And thank you so, so much, honestly, for coming on and sharing your experience. And yeah, I just know that there'll be someone out there who resonates with that and will be in awe of you. And I wish you every bit of luck. I know that maybe luck has nothing to do with it, but I still just wish you all the best for this upcoming birth and postpartum experience. Yeah. And whatever that looks like, I hope and I trust that the supports that you've put in place are there to catch you if needed. But wow, what a journey you've been on. And thank you truly for trusting me to share your story.
Thank you so much. It's a privilege and an honour.
Thank you to all our listeners for holding space for today's story. If you like this episode, please leave a review and rating to help me bring you more amazing content. Join the conversation and be featured on the podcast by sharing your story through my website, perinatalstoriesaustralia.com. If these stories are a bit too much to listen to or to read right now, then come back another time. Protecting your mental health is the number one priority. As always, this podcast and its associated blog and social media accounts is not a substitute for therapy or for getting help. No medical advice is provided, only lived experiences. If any of this does resonate, though, please reach out to a medical professional. See you next time.